Good afternoon. This is Paul Sigris for the National Park Service. We are here in River Edge, New Jersey with Manny Steen, who came from Ireland in 1925 when he was 19 years old. Today is Friday, March 22nd. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Steen, could you please give us your full name and your date of birth?
Well, my full name is Emmanuel Steen. My friends call me Manny for short. And what else did you want to know?
And your date of birth?
June the 23rd, 1906.
And where were you born?
I was born in Dublin, Ireland.
And is that where your family was from?
Yeah, I'm one of eight children. I'm number seven.
I see. Talk about your father.
Well, my parents were married in Glasgow. They weren't Scottish people, but they were married in Glasgow, Scotland in 1894, I believe it was.
What was your father's name?
His first name, Israel.
I see.
They were married there, three children were born in Glasgow.
Why were they in Glasgow?
They got married, they lived there. My father, the little back story there, because my father came to Glasgow from London. To arrive in London, he had come from Turkey. He had escaped from the Cossacks in 1891 during a pogrom in the Ukraine in a village near Odessa. The family were massacred. That is my father's parents. My father and his brother, Jack, escaped. They hid out and they took a ferry boat to Constantinople. They worked there for a short while. Got a job aboard a merchant vessel as a seaman, jumped ship in London, which was typical of the time. In New York here too, many thousands of people jumped ship here in New York Harbor. And jumped ship in London, and exactly how long they worked, I don't know. But eventually, a few years later, they came to Glasgow. My father at that time must have been, I believe, about 19, 20, something like that. His kid brother was about 15, 16, they got work in Glasgow. My father lived in a boarding house. That's where my mother's parents had a boarding house. That's where my father met my mother, and he fell in love with my mother. And I wasn't around yet. Well, there wasn't even a gleam in his eye. But three of the children were born there.
What was your mother's name?
Minnie. The maiden name was Klein, K-L-A-I-N, Klein.
Now, her family was from Glasgow.
No. This is the Jews were on the run in the 1800s. They were looking for shelter. My mother's parents, again, were also from a village near Warsaw, Poland. That's a separate adventure in itself, because the refugees from Poland and from Eastern Europe walked across Europe to the port of Hamburg and emigrated to, they hoped, America. What did happen was there were sea captains with tugboats and boats of any kind and description, unseaworthy, took these people, these refugees, supposedly for $20 would take you to America. You had to provide your own food and bedding. They supplied water and toilet facilities. So they crowded these horrible little vessels in the port of Hamburg and set sail for ostensibly United States. Once they got out in the harbor, everybody got seasick. They couldn't care less where they were. These captains of these illegitimate boats dumped a load of refugees on the east coast of Scotland during the night in a little seaport. They just dumped them and they said, "This is America," and they took off. Now, the Scottish government were very nice. That is, they permitted these people to stay. The people thought they were in America, by the way, because they couldn't speak any English. And these peculiar-looking Scottish people in kilts, and they never seen anything like it. Men wearing skirts, I mean, this was coming from Eastern Europe. But my mother's family was one of the families that came. And they were dumped there, and the Scottish government agreed to permit them to stay, provided they did not become a burden upon the government, economic burden. And they agreed that they would be self-supporting. That's how they eventually, there's a big Jewish settlement in Aberdeen, Edinburgh, and finally they made their way to Glasgow, which was an industrialized city. And They apparently, what the method used by immigrants here in New York City, as well as there, was that people, they would rent a huge apartment, like a 7-room apartment, and the family would live in 2 rooms and rent out the others. This is typical. It's here in the United States, down the east side, that's the way they made a living. My father and his brother were looking for, when they went from London to Glasgow, they went to the Jewish section, they got a room to stay with, and there my father met my mother.
I see.
And that's, and after a few years, when after three children were born, a little depression set in Glasgow. It's a big shipbuilding, by the way, port. And my father, and at that time, Ireland was part of the colony of Great Britain. Just took a ferry boat across from Glasgow. There's a ferry boat to Stranraer in Northern Ireland. They went down to Dublin, and he got a job in Dublin. And as soon as he had a few dollars, he brought the family over. And 5 children were born in Dublin.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the children. You said 3 were born in Glasgow.
Yes.
Who were they?
And what do you mean by that?
Well, what were their names?
Oh, well, there's my oldest brother. His name was Isaac. Next came my sister, Sophie. And then came my brother, Henry.
What year were your parents married in?
1894. See? Those 3 children were born then. They were born in those days. Remember, there were 8 children that were born like a year or two apart, a year, year and a half, something of that kind. I have the exact dates, but it might be not of interest.
What was your father doing as to make money?
Yes. Well, at those you took a job at anything, as I did when I came to America. I mean, I worked for 25 cents an hour when I came to America. Anything, it didn't make any difference. But the same way there. My father, at that time, I have his marriage application, and he was 24 at the time. And it said his occupation was aerated bottle washer. You know what that means? He cleans seltzer bottles. Whatever that is, I don't. But that time, they still have them, those permanent seltzer bottles, you know, those glass bottles. And apparently, they were refillable. See? And apparently that's what he did. It said aerated bottle washer, which was an unknown profession to me, but that's what he, I don't know what else he did, but that was what listed when he got married.
Did your mother work?
My mother was listed at that time. She was 21, he was 24, and she was listed as a seamstress. Seamstress, whatever that meant. I mean, she sold garments, I suppose. I know nothing about exactly what she did, other than it's listed there as seamstress.
So they had 3 children in Glasgow.
Yes.
And then your father went to Dublin.
Yes. And a few months later, I don't know exactly how long, he had accumulated some money, got an apartment, and moved the family over from Glasgow to Dublin.
And you said 5 more children.
And there 5 more children were born over a period of years.
Who were the 5 children?
After Henry came, my sister Bertha. I was the first one born in Ireland, and then twins, my sister Eva and my brother Lewis. Then came me, and then my kid brother, Saul.
How many years between the oldest and the youngest?
I really have to check it out. There was a short span in between. It was a sort of a continuous cycle. You went, as far as from what I understand, like the mothers then were constantly pregnant, if you know what I mean. We're in one and out of the other, that kind of thing.
I see. Did they live in the same place in Dublin for a long time?
Oh, well, yes. We made one move. I was born on a street, St. Albans Road, and it must have been a few years later that we moved to, about 3 blocks away, to Washington Street.
Is this the house that you remember?
The house I remember, I don't remember the St. Albans Road, but the one I remember is Washington Street, because then I was about 6, 7, 8, 9, I have just a very, because my kid brother was born there. My kid brother's 6 years younger. See, so when he was born, I was 6 years old. I do remember the day he was born. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certain things that you remember, outstanding things in your life. You don't remember everything, but you remember
happened to the day he was born that
well,
you remember?
The reason for that is because all children then were born by midwives, with midwives, at home. Children were not born in hospital, only the very wealthy people. But Norm, the average person, child, was born home. And I remember waking up one morning and my sisters, all the boys were chased out of the house. I mean, we were five boys and three girls, see? So the guys were all chased out of the house, and my mother was screaming and crying, and here I'm on the sidewalk in front of the house, a very residential area in the south part of Dublin called South Circular Road. And I was terrified. Your mother crying, I mean, that was in those days, which, my, your mother never cried, and she's screaming, and I guess she was in childbirth, but I didn't know that, see? And I'm standing on the sidewalk. It's really, I remember it so well, because it was an outstanding, it was an important incident to me at the time. And I'm standing there, don't know what's going on, with everybody out. In the meantime, I guess they had sent for the midwife. I didn't know what was going on. My buddy next door, who was a man of the world of 9 years old, he knew everything, this guy, and he came out and said, hey, what's going on? I said, I don't know, my mother's crying, he's going to have a baby. I said, come on, not my mother, you know what I mean? He said, yes, your mother, you'll see. While we were talking, the midwife came down the street. Now, the midwife, we knew she was a nurse, a registered nurse, and those days the nurses had shawls and bonnets, you know what I mean, and a little black bag. And she's walking down the street, and he says, you see? He sees that little black bag, he says, the baby's in there. So I didn't know, you know, and I believed him. I said, come on. He said, you'll see. So sure enough, you know, after she came and the quiet, the noise stopped and everything, and then my sister says, come on in and see your baby brother. Well, I say, great, the nurse just brought him, Mrs. Schultz brought the baby. What else? It took me until I got married to find out it wasn't so. You follow me?
Can you describe the house? Or was it a house? Was it a
yes,
apartment?
As a matter of fact, I was there a few years back. I go back occasionally, and we were there. I took Mary to see it, my wife Mary, to see the house where I lived in.
Now, describe it through the eyes of a child. What do you remember of, like, the rooms or the furniture?
It was they were adjoining cottages, brick cottages, red brick cottages. In front, there was about a 3-foot garden in front with a rail fence in front of it. Backyard, there was a long backyard. Every house there had a long backyard about 50 feet deep. And behind that backyard, there was a lane. And that lane were the backyards from the houses on the next block. So we were backing up to each other. In the laneway, everything was delivered through the lane, such as coal for the winter. The coal would be brought up the lane and dumped in your backyard. The house, it was a cottage in front, but on the left side of the house, there was an extension, an L extension going all the way to the back, so that it was actually bigger than it looked, because Mary said, how did you all get in there? Remember, we were 8 kids. My father and mother is 10. My bachelor uncle was 11. And my grandmother lived with us, 12 people. And you look, well, of course, we were crowded. The boys slept 4 in a bed, toe to toe, you know what I mean? The girls slept 3 in a bed. It was rather crowded, but you didn't know, everybody was in the same condition, you know what I mean? There was it was a nice working class neighborhood.
2 stories?
No, a cottage. Cottage is one floor. As I say, the front 2 rooms were, one was a parlor. I can't remember what the other room was.
Dining room.
I don't remember. And behind that was the kitchen, and then came various bedrooms. Remember, there was no running water. You follow me? There was one tap, yes. Running water coming in. If you wanted to take a bath, there was no toilet. Outdoor, John. And each room, of course, had a potty. My job as the number 7 in the family to empty the potties. I remember that because that was a terrible job, because the youngest one always got that dirty job. You understand? My job was to set the fire. Each room was no central heating. Each room had a tiny fireplace. And the weather, of course, is very temperate there, very moderate. And the result is that each room, would not heat. Before you went to bed, an hour before you went, each room, you lit the fireplace so that the room would get a little bit of warm. And once that fireplace burned out just with a few pieces of coal, remember, we were poor people. not dirt poor. There's a different levels of poverty as I see it now. We weren't dirt poor. We were poor. But we ate.
Describe the kitchen for me.
It was very, very primitive. The stove, which is called a cooker, they call a stove a cooker, it was a coal stove, and an iron coal stove. And my job, of course, was each day when it was kept going all day, but at nighttime I had to clean out the ashes. From the ashes themselves, my father used to make soap, because I told you we were poor people. Well, you made do, see? You didn't buy bread. My mother baked every day bread, because bought bread was too expensive. We couldn't afford it. You had to pay money for that, see? And you bought a sack of potatoes. Potatoes were cheap, like a penny a pound, see? So you bought potatoes, you bought by a 100-pound sack. Flour you bought by a 50, 100-pound sack of flour.
Where did you store all these large containers?
It was crowded. Remember, with all these people, too, it was crowded. Towards the back, the last room at the extension would be sort of a, I would say, like a storage, you follow me? And remember, there was no ice, no refrigeration. Well, it never really got that hot. Average summer temperature was about 60, 62. I wore long johns all year. We used to go bathing, swimming in the Irish Sea. I used to take off my long johns, put my bathing suit on, and go in the water, freeze. It was freezing. I remember there are not too many great swimmers in Ireland, because you just, there's, unless you bathe in a swimming pool, the water, the Irish Sea is about 50, 55 degrees, the temperature.
I'd like you to talk about your grandmother and your uncle who lived with you. Who were they?
Well, my grandmother was my mother. My father's parents, you see, had been massacred in the Ukraine, in Odessa. Staying with us was my mother's mother. And I thought it vaguely...
Moved from Glasgow?
Yes, yeah. From Glasgow, she moved on. In the meantime, her husband had died and was buried in Glasgow. I never knew him.
What was her name?
Sarah, S-A-R-A, Sarah. And I only vaguely remember her as a very old lady, run sort of creeping silently around the house. I don't remember having much communication with her. See?
Did she have her own bedroom?
Yes. Oh, yeah. There was, and it was customary in those days. One room was known as grandparents' room. That was set aside for grandparents whenever they retired, because there was nobody, there was no pension, social security, nothing like that. So when your grandparents, nobody saved any money. I mean, you couldn't. You didn't make enough to save. So a room was set aside for grandparents. In the meantime, that room was used by the family, but it was known as grandparents' room. I know the room I slept in with brothers, that was grandparents. And when they came, so happened they were there. I don't remember exactly when, but when I came, when I was there, my first recollection, she was already there, see? And usually the baby slept in that room with the grandmother.
I see. Yeah, she do any of the cooking in the house?
Not that I remember, no. The only one I remember is my mother cooking all day long. Because remember, every day she had to make like about 6 loaves of bread for the family.
What else did she cook?
Well, it was very interesting because my father made maybe $6 a week.
What was he doing now?
At that time, my first recollection of my father, who was working in a sweatshop as a tailor. Because I remember it was my job again, the little one got all the chores, you follow me, that they to do. I had to bring him his supper in a tin can. My mother would make a soup in the bottom layer, and the one on top would be a little meat or potatoes. I know what was in there. And because he worked from sun up to sun down, I mean, 12, 13, 14 hours a day in a sweatshop. So towards the 6 o'clock, I would have to go, I had to walk about 3 or 4 miles. And bring him his supper, you know what I mean? And he would stop, and then he would finish it. I would take the can back home. And so she had to prepare that and prepare meals.
There was a problem. Was there something that she made that she...
Well, yeah, there was a... remember, we had to cook herrings. One of the big items, by the way, may interest you to know that the Irish are great herring eaters, both fresh and salt herrings. It's really funny when you think of it, because salt herring you associate with Jewish people, but no, salt herring, because before they go bad, the herrings were salted and pickled, so they would keep. Salt herring and potatoes was a very typical Irish dish. It was cheap, you follow me? You could feed a family on it, and your belly was full, so that took care of your needs. That was one of the items, but not only. My job was to, again, go to the butcher in the Jewish section, which was about 2 miles away, in an area in Dublin called Clanbrassil Street. Clanbrassil Street.
Can you spell that, please?
Clanbrassil. Clanbrassil Street was the Jewish section down, like Orchard Street in New York, but different. There was a Jewish butcher, Jewish shoemaker, the Jewish draper, bakery, you know, one of each. And I used to have to go there Friday. And I would, at that time, the entrails of a cow were considered garbage food for cats and dogs, animals. I mean, humans did not eat, like the liver, heart, lung, and all that stuff. Humans didn't eat that. So when the butcher shop came, it would be by the gizzard hanging up on a hook, and the butcher shop would be the whole entrails of the cow. I'd come in, I said, I would tell him you want 2 pennies worth of meat for the cat and the dog. God forbid you say humans, we were going to eat it. We were going to eat this stuff. I'd go in there and the butcher would take a big knife, cut off maybe half a liver, throw in a heart, a couple of lungs. And she says, don't forget to ask for a couple of soup bones. That was the, so my, I come up with a big newspaper, we put it all on a newspaper, and I'd have a handful of stuff for about three pennies. And she would make a stew, a kidney stew, liver, put the whole thing in, cut it up. Boy, you could feed that whole family for 2 or 3 days on that. It was very healthy, by the way, until people were aware that this was excellent, very healthy food. It was given away as dog food, animal food. Yeah.
I see. Let me ask you also about the uncle that resided with you.
Well, my uncle was my father's younger brother. Very nice.
Was this Jack?
He contributed to the family. He worked, and I don't know exactly how much. You didn't ask. He was just there, you know. And he was very nice with the kids. He loved the kids. I remember as a kid sitting on his lap, and he would tell us stories. Vaguely.
What work did he do?
You know, I really never knew. I believe also that he was in tailoring in some aspects, but he was always a dandy. You remember, we look at him. My father was a hard-working man. He looked like a working man, but my uncle always was a dandy. He had a shirt and tie, which was unusual because we were, remember, in working-class people. And he was always a dandy. Always wore a derby. Always looked neat as a pin. And I remember him that way. I remember him very kindly. He was very nice. Always gives a penny once in a while. And in those days, a penny, you say, what can you do with a penny? Well, it was an English penny, it was a large copper coin. But you could divide a penny into 4 sections. Half a penny, there were 2 half pennies you could buy, get, or there were quarter pennies called farthings. So you could get a penny. What we did was, when you got a penny, you immediately got 4 farthings for it. And you spent a farthing at a time. Would you believe a quarter of a penny? You could go to the little, we call them huckster shops, a little general store. And usually it wasn't really a store. It was a front room of somebody's little cottage that they converted. They sold kindling, kerosene, little bits of things to make a few pennies. I mean, you have no idea what living was like. Well, we accepted this because everybody else was in the same boat. Nobody had any more. So you were share and...
You knew no other way.
That's it. Yeah. Towards the end of the week, like most people would like run out, and that's when you would go around borrowing a half a cup of flour, you know what I mean? And my mother says, can you, half a cup of oatmeal, you know, or whatever you needed, because you started running out, because maybe the next day would be payday. You were never ahead of yourself, we were always a day or two behind, see? And if you had, you gave. And the custom was, when you returned it, it was understood you would return it. But you would return with a little more.
I see.
You would always give back a little more than you got. See?
I see.
Which, and that was the custom.
Let me ask you about your religious life. You were Jewish.
Yes.
You talk about being Jewish in Dublin at this time.
Oh, yes. We had the community where we lived. It was a sort of not the primary Jewish quarter. That was on Clumbrassel Street. We were about 2 miles from there on the south side. It was like a secondary Jewish, also a working class, but a little better quality than Clumbrassel Street was really, really a real working class. This was a little more, a little better residential working class. The community was Orthodox Jewish community. Very, very religious. Everybody went to the synagogue. The synagogue was jammed every Saturday.
Was this the only synagogue?
Where we were, this was the only one. There was another one. On Clumbrassel Street, in the Jewish primary Jewish, there were about three or four small storefront synagogues, if you can understand what I meant by that. They were small little wooden buildings. They had small communities. There was on the north side, North Circular Road in Dublin, there was a main synagogue in Dublin, very beautiful structure. And it was called the English Synagogue because part of the service, it was Orthodox, but part of the service was in English. And it was a very high class. The big shots there wore tall hats on Saturday. You knew you were in a high class place because they wore tall hats and morning suits, if you know. They're like Prince Albert, they call them. Whereas where we were, they were working class, they were working suits. But it was a very religious oriented, very religiously oriented.
Was your family very religious?
Very, not very, but they were religious, yes. I was bar mitzvahed in Dublin, in that synagogue on the south side, as I said.
How old were you at that time?
Well, you had to be 13. I would like to just interject right here, because at World War One, when World War One broke out, over there it was 1914, Ireland was neutral. The British government were short of metals. The war was on, World War One, and it was a terrible war. We as kids, we didn't know because we weren't allowed to read newspapers. Children were forbidden to read newspapers. I don't know why, but we weren't allowed. My aunt's husband, my mother's sister lived in Dublin too. She had two sisters, lived with in the neighborhood. Their husband had gone into what they call the waste trade business, which was one of the branches of that was scrap metals. And he had a contract with the British government for all the scrap metals he could get. They needed for munitions and etc. So he said to my, I guess he apparently told my father, it's a good idea to get into this. You get a contract with the government, it would be better than working in a sweatshop. So my father did. My uncle showed my father the business. You didn't have to do anything. You bought from peddlers. They brought in, gypsies, the Irish tinkers, they call them, see, which are known as gypsies, but in Ireland they're called tinkers. They used to bring in, so my father opened up a shop, waste metal, all kinds of metals. And that was around 1916.
And this is about the time that you were born.
Yeah, but it happened, the revolution broke out. There was a problem in Ireland. The 1916 revolution broke out. Now, I remember it fairly well because I was 10. And remember, we heard all the shooting, you understand? And round the corner from where we were, there was a British military barracks, Wellington Barracks, I remember the name. And the guys to play with the kids, the soldiers in the barracks, their kids went to the same school as I did. And so I used to play in the barracks and the tanks and so on there. It was a rather, looking back, it's primitive, the equipment. But the revolution broke out and there was a holy hell. The rebels took the general post office and a couple of the main hotels. And as a matter of fact, I have a picture of my mother in the garden. Some sniper took a pot shot at my mother. I don't know what it is. No, at nighttime, yes. She had gone out, I remember, the backyard to get a bucket of coal. And somebody saw the light in the backyard or whatever it was. Anyway, somebody shot. The next morning, we found a bullet hole in one of the windows in the backyard. It's how I took a picture of it. I don't know why. Then I still have the picture, by the way. And they, anyway, it was a. By 1916, I think my father held his fire, so to speak. When 17, he opened up a place and did well. And remember, we were a big family, so we decided to expand. So we went to Donegal, Sligo, the town of Sligo, northwest of Ireland. Sligo, northwest of Ireland, right in the border of Donegal.
And how is that spelled?
S-L-I-G-O, Sligo. So I lived there. We moved from Dublin to Sligo. In the meantime, by the way, my mother died, 1917.
And what did she die of?
I understand some kidney congestion or something.
What do you remember of that experience?
I just remember, I wasn't, children were shielded those days from such things, you know what I mean? I mean, children were, today I see they bring children to the funeral parlor, but in those days, no, children were shielded from death. And I just vaguely remember that one day my just mother wasn't there. See, I remember when they came to take her in the ambulance, because there was a horse-drawn ambulance in those days, and that was, you know, a rather exciting thing to see. And they took her away, and we knew, because they took you to the hospital in those days, you went to die. You never came out of the hospital. Hospitals was a place you went to die. That was it. Anyway, she died there, see? And it was 1917. We went to Sligo.
When did you make the decision to come to America?
Well, to continue, the tale would be from in. I went to a Catholic seminary in Sligo called Summerhill College as a day student. We were, by the way, rather curiously, the only Jewish family that ever lived in that part of Ireland. They had never seen a Jewish person before. And here, all of a sudden, like an invasion, here, 8 kids, you know what I mean? Hey, looks like a whole tribe is coming. You follow me? And we were just ordinary Irish kids. We didn't feel any different. I never felt any different. An Irish kid. If you ask, well, I'm Irish. And my whole background, the music, everything I knew, Irish history, you know, I was Irish. Nothing else. Wasn't Scottish, wasn't Russian, you know what I mean? Jewish, well, that's a religion, that's not a nationality. So I enjoyed life very much there. It was a lovely, wild country.
And this is where you
I was there until 1919.
I see, and then
the war was over. The contract, my father's contract with the government stopped, and he came back. Now he is a man of means. He had done evidently very well. I don't know his circumstances. They didn't discuss it with the children, you know what I mean? And you didn't ask questions, you get your head broke. You know, you get the back of his hand. I mean, it's none of your business. You just didn't ask those things. We came back to Dublin. And there he was a man of some means. And he bought a small factory where we made trousers. Pants rather. Because trousers embrace the whole area. With about 10 workers. And we bought a duplex apartment right in the heart of city. Of Dublin.
How many of the family are still living with your father at this time?
All of us. We're all together.
No one had married?
No, we had, this is a duplex apartment. We had about 8 bedrooms. I mean, we all of a sudden, I say now, I won't say we're in the money, but we're living in a very nice duplex apartment. Actually, we had the second and third floor in this apartment house. Downstairs were 2 stores. A greengrocer, which is what they call here a fruit market, for me, they call them greengrocers, and a ironmonger. You know, an ironmonger is a hardware shop. They call them ironmongers. So those are the 2 stores downstairs. And we had a private entrance upstairs, and we had a second and third floor. It was a big place. And we bought it completely furnished. The people who lived there were going to America. So my father bought the whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel, complete. And behind it, there was always extensions in these buildings. That's the way Dublin is arranged. There was extensions was the factory. And there was a rear entrance to the factory. It was about, I think we had about 10 or 12 people working there. We made pants. My father had been a tailor, see? So now he subcontracted pants manufacturing. Well, in other words, when you went to have a suit made, you went to a store, a tailor, he measured you, but the pants came to us. We made the pants. Somebody else made the jacket, you know. I guess the best, too. I don't know. But pants, by the way, always it struck me so funny because pants, you say, what is that? Well, we made Bermuda shorts, Mommy. We made walking breeches. You've never seen those, but there are such things as called walking breeches. We made breeches and pants, see? Eh? We made court for the nobility. We made court breeches. You used to wear at Buckingham Palace or the Governor's Ball in Dublin for whatever. We didn't see the people who they placed their order in some very fine store. We were subcontractors, you know.
So was it at this time that you decided you would want to come?
Well, no, I didn't decide that. I mean, my father was living. And I was entered in college, St. Andrew's College in Dublin. That's what I went to.
How old were you when you started?
The college system is different to here,
right?
Because there you don't have to graduate high school to go to college. You can start college at 6 years of age and go right through to get your bachelor's degree in the same place. I came back to Dublin to be bar mitzvahed, actually. My father was terminating his business and I came back. I was then 14. Because my mother was dead, I was allowed a year extension for my bar mitzvah, which should have been at 13. So at 14, I was bar mitzvahed and entered in St. Andrew's College, presumably on a pre-med course. That was the ultimate direction. You consult with the headmaster and he arranges your whole schedule and program. It was a branch of, St. Andrew's was a branch of a Scottish college. This was the Irish branch of it. And I went there, and in 1921, my father died in an accident.
What kind of an accident?
He was eating in a friend's house, and they were joking and kibitzing, and he choked on a piece of meat. And by the time the ambulance came, because there were horse-drawn ambulances, by the time the ambulance came, he was gone. I remember the day, because it was a Saturday, and I was in college, and I come home, I was doing my homework in the shop. He said, you know, he said, make up the payroll and this and so on, and I was doing my homework. And the police came. And it was a terrible shock and so on. Anyway, as a matter of fact, I just came across a newspaper clipping of it from my kid brother who died last year. His wife just sent me the newspaper clipping from the incident.
You were so much younger when your mother died. Did you go to your father's funeral?
No, I don't remember. Of course I did, yes. Yeah. This is vague, it's a very vague remembrance. My grandmother, my mother, my father, and my uncle, they're all buried in Dublin. See? And that was 1921. 1921, we're still under British rule.
And all your brothers and sisters are still living together?
We were all together, yeah. My older brother in the meantime had just married that year, had moved out of the house, and the rest were all still single. That year, my uncle, who had assumed my father's brother, he had assumed command of the family, so to speak. And he said, we can't go on. When they discovered, when my father died, that he had lived up to the income and there weren't any reserves and that I had to stop college. So I took a crash course in wireless, which was a new invention at the time. Wireless was just starting, wireless telegraphy. So I had to have a trade. All I had was an education, but I had no trade. So I took a crash course in wireless telegraphy and took the Postmaster General examination from London and passed. So I have a certificate as a wireless telegraph operator.
And did you get work doing that?
Well, I was preparing. So my uncle said, we're going to go to America. That's all. There's in here, we're going to sell off things and whatever. We weren't consulted. Whatever he did, you know.
I'm sorry, your uncle said this?
Yes.
Was this the uncle that lived?
Yes, the uncle that lived with us. He was still living, Uncle Jack, and there wasn't any money. He said, there's a. In the meantime, I applied, and he said, you'll apply for a passport and a visa to come to America. He couldn't get in without a visa, and you had to have a passport. So I applied for a passport. The one that you'll see, by the way, in the television thing that I did, the passport is in there, a picture of it, rather. I still have the original passport.
Why did Uncle Jack decide that you all should go to America?
There was no money. There was nothing to do. Ireland was going through a terrible estate. The revolution, what had happened was, after 1916, the Irish government was dissolved, the rebels. By 1921, Civil War broke out, and it was awful. There were street ambushes and killings and murders, like what's happening in the North, almost as bad as that. And finally, in 1922, England signed a treaty with Ireland. They had a hands full. You know, I mean, they said, that's enough. 1922, Ireland became not a republic, a free state. England signed a treaty. In the meantime, I had applied in 1921. My uncle said, the economy, there's nothing. I mean, the country is shot to hell. See, unemployment was rife, and what you're going to do?
So he felt that coming to America would be
yes, right, absolutely. In the meantime, my brother Lou, who's a year and a half older than me, as I say, he's passed away, had gone to America. He was a wild one.
I mean, he was gone. What year?
Yeah,
did he go?
The year before, about 1921 or something like that. He was the wild one. And, pardon me, 1920 he left because my father was living. And he couldn't do anything with Lou.
Why did you say he was a wild one? What did he
well,
do?
Well, he was a nice chap, but he just didn't behave. He was a wanderlust. He had gypsy blood in him, so to speak.
What kind of trouble did
well,
he get into?
Well, he ran away. When he was, I remember because he and I slept together. We had a room, and now we're living in Cable Street in Dublin. When he said to me, listen, you don't tell Pop, he says, I'm running away. So he took some piece of bread or whatever the hell it was, and he went away, and he ran away with the gypsies, the tinkers. And he traveled Ireland. My father finally was a police, we got
he
after
was
him.
A darling.
Police got after him, and they finally picked him up, and there was nothing you could do. So my father said, ship him off to Ireland. That's all. Get into trouble.
America.
I mean, to America, rather. And he went to America. He led quite an exciting life over here. In the meantime, it was through him that I met my wife, because my brother Lou was a boarder in their house here in Harlem, in New York City. And he asked me, would I like to write to an American girl? And this was the girl I wrote to. And we were pen pals.
So Lou is already here, and Uncle Jack has decided that you all should go to America.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go about doing that?
Well, I really didn't do anything. He did all the, and I just sort of sat back. And the point was that I had to apply for a visa. He got all the papers and did all the, obeyed.
Huh? Who paid?
Well, there wasn't, the pay, the cost for these items was inconsequential. The passport was like a dollar or something. I mean, these were no big cost. The ticket to America, that was he got that. Follow me? And actually, he paid it off. You could pay off installments. So in the meantime, while you're waiting for your visa, you were paying. Okay, you were paying off your tickets for America.
And did he buy tickets for everybody?
No. I came across with my. My brother Lou came first. The same year, my other brother Henry went with Lou. They were separate times, but they went. Then my sister and my kid brother came. My sister,
sort of one at a time.
Yes, we didn't go all at once. They came in 1924. My sister Eva and my kid brother Saul. The following year, 1925, I came with my sister Bertha.
I see.
See? In the meantime, my brother Ike's wife had died. He went to America.
So you had family here before you even got here.
Yeah, but we were scattered, you follow me? It wasn't a unified family, you know what I mean? There were my brother Lou was out in New Mexico. He was a cowboy up in Wyoming or something. I mean, he was one of those, he was really, I won't say a wild man, a very nice guy, but unsettled.
Yeah.
Me and my older sister, Sophie, second oldest one, had married some chap from London. So she lived in London, see? In 1940 something or other, late 40s, her husband died. And she decided to come to America then to join the family.
I see.
So we sort of then became, and it was through her that I was able to get a lot of the information that I'm talking to you about. A lot of the, evidently she had to have some sort of a certification of her background. So she went from London, she went to Glasgow to the Registrar of Marriages, and she got a copy of my parents' marriage application. This is where a lot of the data I gave you comes from. It's authentic. I have a copy of it here. I'll show it to you.
As a young man, how did you feel about going to America? How did you feel about...
Well, I had no ties. Remember, I was 19. I wasn't going with anyone. I had no ties. And looked forward towards an adventure. My brother Lou was writing to me all about the wonderful things he was doing. He was as a cowboy out there, and he was with Barnum and Bailey. He was an equestrian. With Barnum and Bailey, he was, you know, all over. Nice guy, but very adventurous. Very adventurous. To me, if you ask me, cowboys and Indians, what do we know about America? How little we knew, especially then. Now, perhaps more, but then...
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what were your expectations? What did you expect America to be like?
Somehow, cowboys and Indians, the streets were paved with gold. Not actually paved with gold, but we knew that you could do terrific over here. You only had the good news, you understand?
Were you getting good reports from your brothers and sisters who were here?
Well, they weren't telling me how well they were doing. What they were making here, which was poverty wages, was big wages for Ireland. Remember, a bank manager, when I lived in Dublin, a bank manager was getting like $20 a week. And that's considered, and here, you say, I raised my boy to be president, right? In Ireland, you say, I raised my boy to be a bank manager, because that's the highest they could think of, a bank manager. What do you get, $20 a week? Roughly, you know, that's all they made. So over here, you could make a decent wage, and of course you related to it in Irish terms. But it didn't work out that way. When you came over here, it was difficult.
See? Do you remember? What did you take with you? Do you remember packing?
Yes, I bought a suitcase, a secondhand cardboard suitcase for $2, which one I donated to the Ellis Island Museum. And I didn't have enough stuff to fill it, follow me? Because all I had was the suit, the clothes I wore. I had, I think, an extra handkerchief and a pair of socks. I also had my stamp collection in there, a little crummy collection of stamps, a few little family souvenirs, a few little things. I didn't fill the suitcase, I couldn't fill it, didn't have enough stuff to put in there.
How much money did you take?
Yeah, we're required to have $20. As to show financial independence, would you believe it? At Ellis Island, when I came through Ellis Island, I had $20, I had it in my shoe, so I shouldn't, you know, lose it, or God forbid, they were gambling on the ship. And I didn't gamble. I didn't know how to play poker, frankly.
Okay, let's not get ahead of the story here.
Yes.
What port did you leave from?
I left from the port of Liverpool.
Liverpool,
on the Cunard Line. Beg your pardon?
How did you get to Liverpool?
Oh, well, there's a ferry boat from Dublin. There's a port from that port, actually, what do they call it now? Dunleary. There's a port about 5 miles north of Dublin that has a ferry boat, goes to Liverpool.
And Bertha's traveling with you.
Beg your pardon?
And Bertha's traveling with you, your sister.
My sister, yes. We had cousins in Liverpool, so we stayed overnight with Liverpool. My brother Ike, who was still in Dublin at the time, came with us and escorted us to Liverpool, and there we boarded the ship.
I see. What was the name of the ship?
The Caronia, Cunard Caronia.
Could you spell that, please?
Caronia, Caronia. It's no longer in existence. It had been replaced two or three times over the years, but now it's gone. See, I kept some of the menus. They're there at Ellis Island. I sent them a copy of the. I came third class. They had discontinued the
steerage,
and now there was first, second, and third class. So I came third class.
What were your accommodations like?
Well, everybody had the same thing. It was four in a cabin, four small, tiny cabins, two up and two down, with a tiny wash basin. Toilet was down the hall, a shower. And they served three meals a day.
Were you in a cabin with just men, or was it?
Men, oh yes. It was separated.
With whom did you travel?
Well, my sister was with some other women,
right,
in some of their cabins.
The other men?
I have no idea. I didn't remember, you know. It's a... I really don't remember. I was friendly with the waiter, our waiter. who was a Liverpool lad, see? And he and I became very friendly with him. So my friend Chum, my chum on the ship, was a Liverpool lad. I didn't remember his name or anyone looks at, but it was we're very pleasant. It was the first time I'd ever been on a ship that size, you know what I mean? There were no amenities, none. But you could hear the second and first class passengers having a great time up there. But we didn't care. I mean, it was 10 days, 10-day ride.
Was it a smooth trip?
Well, I was a good sailor, so I had no trouble. Yeah, a lot of people were sick. As a matter of fact, I could come down one day for breakfast. Nobody, the whole huge dining room, I was the only person there. I mean, it was...
what kind of food did they feed you?
Very, very plain, very simple. Yeah, well, you didn't have a choice. They gave you a menu, but you didn't have a choice. You just ate what was on the menu. It was all right. I mean, as far as I was concerned, it was very exotic because I was accustomed to home cooking when my mother died, my sister, Bea, the one I came with, had taken over command of the family's house, And she did the cooking and everything. And she's probably the world's worst cook, you know what I mean? She's a great gal, but she was a terrible cook. And so this stuff tasted great to me, you know? All kinds of exotic things I'd never even heard of. I'll show you the menu.
You said there was gambling on the boat.
Well, yeah, well, you know, the guys were doing, I guess, not crap games, because crap was unknown, see? Doing poker, I guess, or different. I don't know what they were playing because I didn't play card games.
When you say the guys, who are these people?
Oh, passengers. You'd see a whole bunch of guys in a corner on the deck, and then they were playing cards, and I don't know what the hell they were playing. I would stand and watch. You know, come along. I said, no, I know how to play it, and I wasn't interested. I had just the $20. You know what I mean? And I was hanging on to that $20 because that you had to show for financial security.
Imagine.
That was it. At Ellis Island, you had to show that to get off the island, by the way.
Now, did you keep your suitcase with you in the cabin, or was that packed away?
Oh, no. You had the suitcase you had in your cabin, yes. Yeah. It was very close quarters. It was jammed, you know what I mean?
Did they supply any kind of entertainment?
No, nothing at all. Oh, sometimes a passenger would sing or something, but it was everything was, the ship provided nothing, follow me? Often on the deck, if it was a nice night, you'd get up there, some of them would sing, have a little community thing. But nobody organized anything, it's just whatever you did. Some people had concertinas or whatever, and people played, you know, and it was interesting, I found. I met a few people, I don't remember them at all now, but...
Were there a lot of people traveling from Ireland?
The ship was jammed. Oh my God, it must have been about 2,000 people on that thing. In the third class, we were jammed. Now, we anchored on New York Harbor, and we were tendered into the island. The ship, of course, couldn't pull up. And yes.
This is probably a good place to stop this tape. End of tape one.